Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us for the second installment of Bishul B'Shabbes. I'm going to say from the outset, I'm okay giving these out beforehand, but I'm not sure if it'll be helpful or distraction, but somebody suggested maybe it would be helpful to print the slides. So if you're interested, I printed at least tonight's. Last week's you can download online if anybody wants. I'm happy to print a few as well. So on your way out, everything that appears on the screen tonight will be available in print form as well. So hopefully that is helpful. So we're going to begin tonight by just quickly reviewing some of the major concepts that we saw last week. And then we're going to jump right into our new discussion for tonight. So some of the important terms that we mentioned last week, all of which I believe we will be mentioning tonight in some context. When it comes to Yad Soled Isbo, so this we defined as the temperature at which liquids cook, at least in halachic terms. There's quite a wide range that we discuss in terms of what that actual temperature is, but it's a very significant shear, a measure, when it comes to making important decisions in the kitchen on Shabbos. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention that as well, and that is the shear of Yad Soled Isbo is relevant in another very, you know, important and prevalent area of halacha, and that is when it comes to kashrus issues, basar b'chalav, when it comes to things that sometimes go wrong in the kitchen, if there's a mixture of milk and meat or some other contamination in the kitchen, so often, part of the one very important part of the question will be whether or not whatever happened involved food or utensils that were hot, and if so, how hot. So the shear of Yad Soled Isbo, which is important when it comes to Shabbos, is the same shear when it comes to other areas of halacha as well, such as when it comes to bishul by kashrus. We mentioned last week that there's a concept of Meichel Ben Drusoi, which is the point at which solids are cooked according to halacha. We mentioned that this is whether a third or halfway cooked, and while practically that was not of tremendous relevance, because we mentioned that you wouldn't be allowed to really cook something even beyond that point, it may be relevant when it comes to the question of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul, which is the next term that we discussed last week, that once something is cooked, so you cannot practically cook it again. So therefore, this is the basis for a major kula in halacha, that you can take, let's say, cooked foods and reheat them on Shabbos. We don't have to be concerned about you cooking them again, because once it's been cooked once, you can't cook it again. And then there's a question of whether there is bishul achar afiyah. And we said that at least it's possible that according to some opinions, even after something has been baked, it may still be subject to cooking. And so therefore, there may be situations in which something which was baked previously may not be reheated or warmed on Shabbos if there's a concern for bishul. And the final review of a term that we mentioned last week is the definition of bishul for the purpose of our discussion is the change or the transformation of the properties of a food or a substance through the application of a heat source. Last week we talked about many different sources of heat, and tonight we're really going to focus exclusively on the concept of kelim. Many of us, probably all of us, are familiar in a general sense with the concept of a kli rishon, kli sheni, kli shlishi, so we're really going to break that down tonight and talk in very, very specific terms about what each of these mean and how that applies as far as food preparation on Shabbos. So when it comes to a kli rishon, there are basically three different types of... I can't move too much because I won't be able to read what I put here, but hopefully that's helpful. And if not, you could move on a little bit. Let's see if that works. Is that good? Okay. So a kli rishon shagabe esh means when you have a kli rishon, what does a kli rishon mean? Literally means the first utensil or vessel. So that would mean the, let's say, pot. It's not only a pot, but the pot in which food has been cooked. You could have a kli rishon shagabi esh, which means it's still on the fire. The contents is still on the fire, or it is connected to the source of heat. So there you have two pictures of there, one of a kettle that's actually in the fire. The other one is an electric urn. If the urn is plugged in and it is turned on, so for all intents and purposes, that's what we call a kli rishon shagabi ha'esh. Then you have something called a kli rishon shehusam ha'esh, that it's been removed from the fire, but the water, let's say, is still in the kettle that it had been in at the time that it was cooked. So it's still the kli rishon, but it's no longer on the fire. And finally, when it comes to kli rishon, we speak about iroi mikli rishon. That is when the contents are being poured directly from the kli in which they have been cooked. So if you would, let's say, take a kettle and pour the water out, the actual process of pouring is called iroi, but we're going to have to examine exactly what happens to, let's say, the water, for example, when it is being poured from the kettle. Or if you would dispense water from an urn, we would probably assume, there are different opinions when it comes to this, we'd probably assume that the typical way that we dispense water from the urn would constitute iroi as well. So now that we have these three terms down, so let's talk about what this means, what it means in a practical sense. When it comes to kli rishon shel gabei esh, which would include, let's say, a pot of soup on a blech, or a kettle or urn, a crock pot, practically speaking, we do not put any foods, whether they are cooked or uncooked, solid or liquids, into a kli rishon shel gabei esh. So just sort of imagine, if there's a pot that's on the fire, it doesn't really make a difference what you're putting in or why you're putting it in or how hot it is, how cold it is, whether it's cooked, it doesn't make a difference. You can't on Shabbos put anything in a pot that is on the fire or a crock pot, let's say, that is plugged in. You can't put anything in there. And it should be mentioned, even at this point, that even if there's absolutely no concern of bishul whatsoever, why would there be no concern of bishul? Let's say you're going to take something which is previously cooked and it's hot, and it's at the point where even if it would cook anymore, it would ruin it, so it's not even like we mentioned last week, stomach viralo, it would still be a problem. Can anybody think why? It's mechzeik mivashel. That we haven't really discussed this much because we're going to wait at least until next week to talk about some of the dinim of the Rabbanon. But on Shabbos, there's a separate issur of doing things that look like cooking. And when you take something and put it in a pot that's on the fire, even if it is not in fact cooking, it certainly looks like cooking. That's what cooking looks like. And so therefore, that would be forbidden anyhow. So as a rule, and sometimes the absolute rules without exceptions are the easiest ones to remember, you can never put anything that is on the fire into a pot, let's say, that's on the fire. Now, even though you can't really do anything, I mentioned over here that if it's uncooked, this may actually be forbidden in HaTorah. If it's cooked already, as I mentioned, it still may be forbidden. This is also Mexican Mavashel. And obviously, this includes placing anything into crock pots as well. Crock pots are also considered to be a kli rishon shel gabei esh. The next is, as we mentioned, a kli rishon shel husa min ha'esh, a kli rishon that has been removed from the fire. So can I put something in a kli rishon that has been removed from the fire? So here it depends on the temperature. If it is no longer yadzo ledisbo, now if you think about taking, let's say, a kettle off of the fire, so it would take a considerable amount of time for the water to cool down below the point of yadzo ledisbo. But if it is no longer yadzo ledisbo, then you can put anything inside. Now that should be fairly obvious at this point, because if it's below yadzo ledis, then it can't possibly cook anyhow. But it still needs to be said. You know, we don't say that. It's a kli rishon, so by definition, you must always transfer the contents to another keli. No, if it's below yatzo ledes, then that's fine. If it is yatzo ledes, so it may be an issur min haTorah, it's really going to depend on what you're putting in. So therefore, if it's still yatzo ledes, what we would say is that only fully cooked solids may be placed in a kli rishon shagav shagavish. So if you take, let's say, a pot of soup, and you transfer it, you take it off of the blech, off of the fire, and it is no longer on the fire, so it's still steaming hot. So can you put anything in there? So the answer is yes, you could put fully cooked solids. So one example would be table salt. Let's say putting it in a fire, putting it in a pot, that would be an example of something which is fully cooked. We're going to talk a little more about salt later tonight, but that would be an example of placing something in a kli rishon that is no longer on the fire. Yeah, Fred.
Just don't go back.
You can put something on a crock pot to warm it up. That would not be considered to be a problem of placing something in the kli rishon. Of course, we would still, whatever you're going to put on top of the crock pot would have to be something that could be reheated on Shabbos, namely fully cooked solids. Because you would assume that anything you put on the crock pot would reach the temperature of yatzo ledisbo. So we're going to talk, not tonight, but we're going to talk probably next week, begin the discussion about how you could reheat foods on Shabbos. So that would be a legitimate manner of reheating foods under certain circumstances. Then we're going to talk about the sort of the next stages called Irui Mikli Rishon, pouring from the Kli Rishon. So once you pour from the insulating walls of the Kli Rishon, remember last week we saw Tosos that explained that the difference between the Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni is that the walls of the Kli Rishon are hot. Sort of helps retain the heat and insulates the hot contents inside. So once you pour it from the Kli Rishon, it immediately begins to cool. So the Rishonim therefore argue as to what is the status of the contents of the pot once they have been poured from the Kli Rishon. So if you can imagine, again, I think the water kettle is sort of the best example to just always default to when you're thinking about this. So you have a kettle of water. As soon as you start pouring the water, so the water is now starting to cool. So for the purpose of Shabbos, do we seem that stream of water that is coming out of the kettle, does that have the ability to cook or not? So one opinion is Iroi has the same status as a klisheni. The other opinion probably should present in the opposite order. One opinion, the more machmir opinion, is listed over here as number two. It retains the din of a Kli Rishon, meaning it's true that it started to cool, but it's still sort of connected to the Kli Rishon and has the same din as a Kli Rishon. So just like we said, you can't put anything in a Kli Rishon that hasn't been cooked. You can't pour water from a Kli Rishon on something that has been cooked. That's one opinion. The other opinion says no. Iroi has a din of what's called a Kli Sheni. What's the status of a Kli Sheni we haven't seen yet? So forgive me for presenting this a little out of order, but I'm trying to go sort of in sequential order, even though we haven't explained all the terms yet. Lahalacha, we basically follow sort of a compromise opinion, and that is that Iroi, when you pour from a Kli Rishon, it can cook, but only Kedei Klipa, which means it's only going to cook the outer surface of whatever it is that you are pouring it onto. So, okay, but you're not allowed to cook outer surfaces on Shabbos anyway. So then of what practical significance is that compromise opinion? Is that kula? I mean, for all intents and purposes, it sounds a lot like saying it basically retains the din of a Kli Rishon. So here's where it becomes relevant, maybe. Let's talk about this case. You have over here, it's not necessarily a great picture, but a mug that has a tea bag. We haven't discussed tea bags yet. I'm going to get to that tonight as well. But you're pouring boiling hot water from the kettle onto the tea bag. So we said that Iroi from a Kli Rishon can cook Kedei Klipa. It could cook, let's say, the outer surface, a surface, literally like the peel. So a tea bag, I mean, let's assume there's stuff in the tea bag that's not cooked yet. So can you pour water from a Kli Rishon onto a tea bag? The answer is no, because that would be a problem of cooking Kedei Klipa. Let's talk about another example. I couldn't find a picture of pouring water on a baby bottle. But you can imagine there's a baby bottle and the milk is chilled and the baby would prefer to drink the bottle when it's a little warm. So one way to warm a bottle is to just take hot water and just pour it on the bottle. Not in the bottle, but on the bottle. So what would you say? It would be mutter. What? Because what are you cooking? You're not cooking any. You're cooking, let's say, the plastic bottle. You're not cooking the plastic. So maybe it'll work effectively to take the chill out of the milk. That would be permissible. Right? I'll give you another example. Over here, and we're going to talk about this in a little more length tonight. But here you have, let's say, a bottle which has cool water, and you want to take a little hot water and pour it in just to, again, to warm the water a little bit. Not to warm it too much, but to warm it a little bit. So this is also considered a case in which it is permissible to go ahead and pour the water directly from the Kli Rishon, because there, when it comes to the liquid, the water, we're not concerned of the concept of klipa, because the water, imagine you're taking this bottle and you stick it under the urn. So as soon as the urn, the water goes in to the bottle, so it is displacing evenly throughout the entire bottle, you know, and therefore we're not concerned of bishul kedei klipa. You know, when we talk about solids, there may be a concern of kedei klipa, but not when it comes to liquids. So these are, let's say, some practical examples of why it is important to know that iroi from a Kli Rishon is not always going to be permissible, but since it only cooks kedei klipa, there are certain leniencies. Now, if we're following this sequence, so the next thing on the line should be what's called a Kli Sheni. Kli Sheni means sort of the next vessel, after I've taken the contents of the Kli Rishon and transfer them to another keli, so that's called a Kli Sheni. So number one, as we saw last week, a Kli Sheni is not mevashel. Now this slide is actually a review of what we saw last week. Why is a Kli Sheni not mevashel? Shouldn't it just depend on the temperature? That's really all that should matter. So we saw three different opinions, right? Tosfos explained that the walls of the Kli Sheni are going to be cool. They will not be hot, typically like the walls of a Kli Rishon. And so therefore, this is it is not going to be an effective means of cooking, or at least not as effective. The Rishami says that even a Kli Rishon is not really considered to be a form of Bishul on the Torah level. So therefore, Chazal, we're not gozer when it comes to a Kli Sheni. And then the third possibility we said is that it's not considered the normal manner of Bishul. We explained last week that when it comes to Malacha on Shabbos, sometimes the normal way, the derech that you do a particular Malacha, is going to be the only forbidden manner. So these are three possibilities. So based on this rule that a Kli Sheni is not mevashel, you would think that we can stick anything under all circumstances inside of a Kli Sheni. But that is not the whole story. Because there is a Mishnah in Masach HaShabbos. The Mishnah teaches, and this is a quote from the Mishnah, Kol Shabbat B'chamin Me'erav Shabbos, Shorin Oso B'chamin B'Shabbos, which, as explained by the Mefarshim, means as follows. Anything that was cooked on Erev Shabbos, you may place inside of a Kli Rishon on Shabbos. Anything that was not cooked before Shabbos, Madichin Obasabachamin Shabbos. You may not put it in a Kli Rishon, but you may be Madichin it. So what does that mean? So the Mefarshim explained that means you could put it in a Keli that's hot, but not a Kli Rishon. Namely, that's what we call the Kli Sheni. However, and here's the key words in the Mishnah, Chutz, with several exceptions. Min Hamaliach Hayashan, Vukulayis Ha'ispanin, Shahadachasan, Zohi Gemar Melachton. Says the Mishnah, there are several examples. Both of these examples involve fish, some types of either a very heavily salted fish or a very thin sort of fish. But the Mishnah says that there are examples of foods that may in fact be subject to Bishul even in a Kli Sheni. Generally, the Mishnah gives a klal which applies in almost all situations that a Kli Sheni is not mevashel. However, there are several exceptions. And the Bir Halacha says that actually these are not the only exceptions. Anything like this, which is dak virach biyoter, something which is very soft, very flaky, very light. We don't know exactly how to define these terms. They are somewhat subjective. But the Bir Halacha says that the Mishnah over here is basically making an entire category is an exception to this rule, not two specific examples. And this, in fact, is what Poskim referred to as Kali HaBishul, that there is a category of foods that's known as Kali HaBishul, which we would translate as foods that are easily cooked, more easily than others. And when it comes to Kali HaBishul, so they could even be cooked in a Kli Sheni. So this should be very simple. All we would need to do is produce a list of what is Kali HaBishul. And if I have a poor memory, I'll hang the sign in my kitchen. These are the Kali HaBishul. I'll remember. These are the things that I cannot stick inside of Kli Sheni, and everything else I can stick inside of Kli Sheni, right? But it's not so simple. The problem is that we don't really know what is Kali HaBishul, what's not. Chazal basically, said that this is not something that we very clearly define what is considered Kali HaBishul. And so therefore what we do is we sort of swing to the other extreme, and we say that you shouldn't put anything which is uncooked in a Kli Sheni unless we know that it's not Mikali HaBishul. It's so funny the way the whole logic sort of becomes inverted. So there are several things which Chazal say, we are sure this is not Kali HaBishul. One of them, perhaps the most important one of all, is water. That's very helpful, actually. Water is not Kali HaBishul. So that means that there's no problem of Bishul of water in a Kli Sheni. Right? Because the only thing that you can cook inside of a Kli Sheni is Kali HaBishul. We don't know what Kali HaBishul are, but we know that water is not among the Kali HaBishul. So therefore, you can definitely put water, cold water, uncooked water. Remember we explained last week that we assume that any water that's cooled down is, for all intents and purposes, uncooked anyway. We assume that Yesh B'Shalach HaBishul B'Davalach. And so therefore, you could put that in a Kli Sheni. We'll give some practical examples in a moment. Another one would be olive oil. Not sure if that is as relevant, but depends. I don't spend too much time preparing food, so I don't know. Maybe that is. Ginger, cinnamon, something which the Mefarshim called tavlin, which doesn't necessarily include many or most of the typical spices that people would purchase and use in their food. But there are, again, exceptions, very specific exceptions to what is not considered Kali HaBishul. And if you know that something is on the list of something which is not Kali HaBishul, then in fact you could place it in a Kli Sheni, again, even if it's uncooked, because we assume that a Kli Sheni is not mevashel. Bottom line is, we treat a Kli Sheni like a Kli Rishon by most uncooked foods, with some common practical exceptions. Ice Cube in a soup would be a good example. We're going to talk about others later tonight. Let's just use that very common example. Assume for a moment, and we're going to discuss this later if this is always so, that soup in the bowl is a cliché. Often it's not, but let's assume it is. So, what can I put inside of my soup? I could put salt. We're not going to talk about pepper. We might as well. We're talking about it right now. Can I put pepper inside of my soup, my hot soup in the soup bowl? So again, if the soup bowl would actually be a cliché, which it typically isn't, so it may be a problem. What about an ice cube? It's going to melt right before my eyes. I'm going to see it disappear. So that's not a problem, because an ice cube is water. And the cliché, we said it cannot be mevashal water. Another example would be milk, let's say, putting that in coffee or tea, since the milk has been cooked beforehand, pasteurized, so therefore it is not a concern. Warming a bottle of milk, which I guess probably means I could take a little hot water and stick it into a bottle of milk, with the examples that we gave earlier. Which is a question, just conceptually for a moment. Let's just think about it. If the concept of a cliché not being mevashel, remember we explained last week, let's say according to, why should it be that Kali Abishal can be cooked in a cliché? Right? We gave three reasons as to why a cliché cannot cook, right? So why should there be an exception of Kali Abishal? So according to Tosfos, it sort of makes sense, because Tosfos explained that the reason why cliché is not mevashel because the walls are not as hot. And so therefore, it's sort of a din in Metzias. It's just the way the cliché operates. And we could say, well, there are certain things that, because as the Bialacha said, they're dach v'rach, so therefore they could be cooked even in something which is normally not ideal for cooking. But according to Rishalmi, let's say, that a cliché is not included in the gezeira, so why should there be exception of Kali Abishal? So there's a very interesting opinion of the Prima Gadim, which we're going to come back to a little later tonight. Maybe we'll talk about tradition soups, we'll talk about. But that maybe, when it comes to Kali Abishal, the problem over here is not Bishal, but there may be another malacha involved. And that malacha would be Makab Apatish, which is a very interesting opinion. Most poskim assume that really there is a Makab Apatish when it comes to the preparation of food, at least not in this regard. You could maybe speak about Makab Apatish when it comes to other things involving food, such as being Mafish, Chumas, and Maestros. But Makab Apatish is the malacha, which means when you take something which is not yet functional, and you do something which now makes it functional. Now, normally the concept of Makab Apatish applies to Kalim. We think about Makab Apatish when it comes to, let's say, fixing something which is broken, a piece of furniture, some instrument, something which is otherwise not really functional at this point. And I do something which now fixes it or completes, literally sort of completes its creation for its intended use. So the Prima Gadim wants to say that concept can be applied to food as well. And so therefore, going back to those examples that I mentioned in the Mishnah and Shabbos, you have certain foods, certain types of fish, let's say, that are not really edible in their raw state, but it doesn't take a lot to make them edible. All you need to do is heat them up a little bit, and even in a cliché, that's enough. And so therefore, the malacha may actually be a different malacha, which is really very fascinating, according to Prima Gadim, even though not necessarily paskin this way, but just to consider the possibility that there may be other malachos over here involved, and it's not only the malacha, the 11th malacha of Bishul. Okay, now following the sequence, so now we're now pouring from the klisheni, right? So what's the status of the liquids, let's say, when I'm pouring them from the klisheni? So some people actually have a cup at home, they call it the klisheni cup. Somebody gave us one as a gift that actually says klisheni. That's its purpose in life, is to be a klisheni. Anybody have one of those? Klisheni? Good, you also have a klisheni. Good. What was that? Oh, probably. Okay, so we have this cliché cup. So when you pour from the cliché, what can that do? In other words, the water that is being poured from the cliché, what's the din of that water? So that would be, here's our kli rishon al gabei esh. Now I'm pouring that, and that's called irim kli rishon, into, let's say, my cliché. And then I'm now pouring from the cliché into something else. So now that's the white thing is now my kli shlishi. So now we're focusing on the Iruy Miklisheni thing. So what's the din over there? So the din is that Iruy Miklisheni has the equivalent status of a Klishlishi. Oops, spelling error. kli shlishi. It has the, it's the same as a kli shlishi. Perfect. Right? Well, it depends. Was it ben on? What's the status of a kli shlishi? Well, we don't know yet. So that brings us to our final discussion in Kalim. What's a kli shlishi? So interestingly, a kli shlishi, even though we talk about it all the time, is not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. The major Rishonim did not mention kli shlishi, including the Rambam, the Rif, the Rush. Eliezer Mitz is quoted as being the other only Rishon that speaks about a kli shlishi. So that's very interesting. We don't know what to do with a kli shlishi. So why do you think the Gemara didn't mention it? So that's a major machlokas among the poskim. The Gemara didn't speak about a kli shlishi. Why? The Gemara, Chazal could not conceive of a concept of a kli shlishi? Of course. I didn't hear what he said. What?
It was obvious.
It was obvious to them, but was not obvious to latter-day poskim, who debated this. So the conclusion is quite significant. So one approach, it should be obvious. What are the two possibilities? Either a kli shlishi is the same as a kli sheni. The point, and the reason why Gemara doesn't mention it is because it doesn't make a difference. Sheni, shlishi, revi. The point is the same. Kozman is still yatzo ledesbo. It has, for all intents and purposes, the same din as a kli sheni. Nothing happens when you transfer it again and again and again and again and again. We may know, based on, you know, the laws of physics, that something is happening, but halachically, as long as the Yad Soledes, it has the same status of a kli shteinu, which we already said, cannot be mevashel, except when it can. The other possibility is that, no, the only time we're machmir by Kali Abishal when it comes to kli sheni, comes to kli shlishi, now you're definitely safe. A kli shlishi cannot cook anything, even Kali Abishal. So those are basically the two opinions. The Mishnah Berurah is machmir and implies that there's no difference between kli sheni and kli shlishi, which would mean that whatever the din is by a kli sheni, you're stuck with that. And you have to figure out how to manage those situations. But there's nothing you could do, you'll forgive me, to fix it. It is what it is. And as long as the water, let's say, is hot, that's it. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zuchana Levracha, however, in several shuvas taught that a kli shlishi is not mevashel at all, even Kali Abishal. So Rav Moshe basically felt that you're safe. When you immerse something, when you place something in a kli shlishi, and we already said that the din of iruy from a kli sheni has the same din as a kli shlishi, so it's not going to be mevashel at all. Now, even according to the more strict view of the Mishnah Berurah, it would only be said to be machmir by uncooked foods which are known to be kali abishal. In other words, even according to the Mishnah Berurah, we wouldn't have to take this to such an extreme and say, I'm going to be machmir that even, you know, something which I'm not sure about. But the things that we know may be among the Kali Abishal, which include more than just those two fish, which are mentioned in the Mishnah, would include, as the Bir Halacha said, anything which is dak verach. And the most practical common example of this is a tea bag, which we assume would be Kali Abishal. So then, according to the more strict view, that we would be machmer. So this comes up, of course, when it comes to making tea, which was one of the really hot topics, pun intended, when it comes to Bishal on Shabbos. So there are two major, primary methods of making tea on Shabbos. The first one, this would satisfy the more strict opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, would say that you should make before Shabbos tea essence, which basically means, you don't need me to tell you to make tea essence, but essentially what you're doing is you're preparing a tea concentrate before Shabbos, and this is going to be added to hot water. So basically, prepare before Shabbos. If the tea essence is cold, you may not do iruy mikli rishon, meaning you wouldn't want to take water directly from the urn or the kettle and pour it on top of the cold tea essence. Why not? Because we said already that iruy from mikli rishon can be mevashel kedei klipa. Presumably, you're going to want a hot cup of tea. That's what most people want. If you want a cold cup of tea, you know, that actually would be okay. But if you want a hot cup of tea, you're going to be cooking the water kedei klipa, and that's going to become a point. So you would have to add it to water that is already in a kli sheni. And this would be the preferred method according to the Mishnah Berurah. So the concept of making tea this way on Shabbos is one which satisfies this more strict opinion. I'm calling it the more strict opinion. I don't mean to imply or suggest that this is a das yachid. The Mishnah Berurah, we know, is view has been, in many areas of halacha, has been accepted with very, very wide acceptance throughout Klal Yisrael. So there are many, many, many people who have follow this opinion, and it is not necessarily viewed as being a chumrah. That being said, Moshe Feinstein, Zuchano Levracho, who said that Klishlishi is not Mevashel. So, of course, set the stage for another very, also a common approach that other people follow. And that would be using a Klishlishi when making tea. Now, the advantage, of course, the most practical advantage to this approach is that you don't have to prepare anything before Shabbos. And you could decide, let's say, I want this flavor tea, I want that flavor tea. You can make it, use a tea bag. Now, this would be acceptable only according to those who say that a klishlishi is not mevashel, especially, again, because tea bags, spices are unprocessed and they're very fine. So we consider that kalei bishul. And just to be aware that use of tea bags may potentially involve other melachos as well. We're not going to talk about that now, but just to be aware, like when it comes to many, you know, the preparation of many foods on Shabbos, there may be other potential issues as well. Borer, you know, perhaps being one of them when it comes to tea bags. So just to be aware that even if you are using a klishlishi, you may still have to be mindful of other malachos. Remember last week, Mr. Brewer pointed out in Hagdama to Kilcha Shabbos that it's, he quotes Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, I think, that it's impossible for a person to avoid, inadvertently anyhow, being Mechal Shabbos in the kitchen if you don't learn all of the malachos. There are many, many problems that could potentially come up in the kitchen that people don't think about. Now, when it comes? Yeah.
Just the question. So the first opinion, first you have hot water in the third shlishi, and then you add the essence?
So you wouldn't even need a klishlishi for the tea essence, because the tea essence essentially is water. It's, right? It's water that, it's now tea, and it's cooled down. But it's all, the water's been cooked beforehand, and obviously the tea's been cooked beforehand. So we said already that water cannot be cooked in a klisheni. So you couldn't take, let's say, one way that you could tea essence, if you let's say, pour, probably the easiest way to do it, if you take a mug and stick it under the urn, a lot of people use urns, and you just, you know, dispense water from the urn. So now the water in the mug is a klisheni, and then you could take the tea essence and pour it in. You could also pour it from there, but you don't have to do that. You couldn't. So that way you're putting the tea essence into a klisheni. And obviously it's being heated up right away.
And let's say if you were to put the essence first and then the hot water on top, that would be problematic.
You should not do that. You should not do that, because again, that would be cooking. That could be iroi from a kli rishon, could be mevasho kede klipa, right? We cook the outer surface, and over here, since what you're doing is heating up an entire liquid, you know.
So the hot water into the cliche and then putting the essence.
Exactly. Thank you for clarifying. Okay. Now, what about making instant tea or coffee? So instant tea or coffee is a little different, because instant tea and coffee roasted previously at very high temperatures, and therefore it's cooked already. Well, we're going to assume for the purpose of discussion it's considered to be cooked. And therefore, it may be prepared even a klisheni. There are those who will still be strict, because they'll say the following, that since the tea and the coffee is dissolvable, maybe we should treat it as a liquid, right? We said that ein bishul acha bishul when it comes to solids. A solid that was cooked cannot be recooked. So when you see the, you know, instant coffee, it really is, it appears to be solid, it is a solid form, but since it becomes soluble and dissolvable in the water, so there are those who want to say, really, we treat it like a liquid, and which, therefore, we're concerned for, the opinion says, yesh b'shalach ha-bishul b'davalach, and so therefore, there were those who would say, even when you're making instant tea or coffee, still best to use a kli shlishi.
Can I ask you a question about the coffee? Is there, so, if you could put coffee into a kli shlishi, does that mean you could put the coffee, let's say it's a kli shlishi, you could put the coffee in first and then pour the water directly from the keli sheni into the kli shlishi? Like, you don't have to put the coffee after the hot water.
Right, you can do that. But you cannot pour from the kli rishon. In other words, if you're making instant coffee, you wouldn't put the coffee in the mug first and then stick it under the urn.
Right. So
you wouldn't do that. But
the way that we always do it, and I'm just trying to find out if there's a reason for it based on everything that you're saying, we take the keli sheni, we put the hot water in it, we put it into a kli shlishi, and then put the coffee in, and not do like we do all week, which is your coffee is in the
right. So
first. Is there any reason?
So it could be, again, because some are still strict to use a kli shlishi since tea and coffee is dissolvable. So maybe that's why.
No, it still is a kli shlishi. It's just that the coffee is going in after
Oh, you're saying why you would dafka put the coffee, the water in first? Maybe because you don't want, maybe people will be concerned about like dyeing the water, which is not really a concern, but maybe you could, it could be that somebody would be concerned about svi of the water. If you take clear water and then you pour the coffee in, maybe somebody will say that's like dyeing the water, which it isn't. It's not a concern, but maybe that's where. I can't think of any other.
Yeah. You don't think of it as like instant versus tea bag, and you do the same thing for tea bag. You have to pour into a klish lishi. So for this, you don't like.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who I mean, there are klish lishi kind of people who would just do everything klish lishi, just because it's just easier when you think in klish lishi terms. Yeah.
Other than tea and tea bag is tablin, how would that affect any?
You mean you've heard that tea bags are not considered to be kali abishal, yeah. Right? There is such an opinion. There is such an opinion. The Rav said that Rav Chaim used to make tea in a tea bag, because they held that it was not kali abishal. But yeah, but not, you know. But that's not an accepted opinion. But there is such a shita that says the tea bags are not, we dafka not kali abishal. But you know, we generally don't follow that opinion. Something to be aware of there. Something coffee bags. I don't know if anybody uses those, but like tea bags, same concept. But those are actually they are blends of instant coffee and ground roast coffees, which have not been cooked, and so therefore you should not use those on Shabbos unless you're going to use it the same way you would use a tea bag. If you're going to use a kli shlishi, the same way you can prepare tea, you can prepare coffee bags. Yeah.
Before you were saying that the soup might not be a kli shani in the bowl, but if you're taking it from a ladle, uh-huh, the kli rishon, and putting it in the bowl,
excellent question.
So, something.
Exactly. So we're going to get there. We're going to get there soon. Even though, you know, we'll see how much we get to tonight, but I think we will get to the ladles. And I'll be able to answer that question. Okay, adding ingredients to tea or instant tea coffee, adding milk or sugar or lemon juice should be fine for the reasons that we mentioned, because in all these cases, you are taking something which was previously cooked and placing it into a klisheni or a klishlishi. A raw lemon should not be placed into a klisheni. So if your tea, let's say you make tea with tea essence, it's a true klisheni, you should not place a raw lemon, because as you mentioned, you don't want to put anything which is not cooked beforehand in a klisheni unless you know for sure that it's not among the kali abishal, and a fruit such as a lemon is not in that group. A klishlishi, again, according to those opinion that says that a klishlishi is not mevashel at all, though a raw lemon should be fine. Salt, typical table salt, has been cooked as part of the processing and may be added to a kli rishon shelo agabi esh. I think I mentioned that previously. Certain gourmet salts are produced by solar evaporation of seawater and are not cooked in production. So you should be mindful of that not all salts are created equal. Instant oatmeal, a very common household food, which is made by steaming fine-cut oats. It is not previously cooked. Flavored instant oatmeal may actually have raw spices, also obviously not cooked. So all things considered, hot water should not be added to instant oatmeal, unless, of course, according to Rav Moshe, it would be fine with a kli shlishi. According to Rav Moshe, basically, you would be able to prepare any foods in a kli shlishi without concern, because it's not going to cook under any circumstances. You should be, again, we're only talking about bishul, but when there are some other very, very common potential shilas, I'm just mentioning that when it comes to oatmeal, there may be other problems that you run into, such as lush. One of the Lamentos Melachos says lush kneading, when you take a liquid and a solid and mix them together and make some sort of semi-solid consistency, that may be a problem of lush. There may be ways around that problem, but just to be mindful of the fact that even if you are able to completely circumvent any bishul problems when it comes to making oatmeal, you may run into other problems as well. Cereal seem like oatmeal, but they're actually a little different. And baby formula are, the cereals are pre-cooked with liquid, then they're dehydrated and then ground. So therefore, there's no problem with bishul. Again, although I mentioned beforehand, applies here as well, there may be an issue with lush. Baby formula and milk powder are pre-cooked in processing and therefore permissible. Instant soups. So, I don't know if anybody, these are very, very common in camp. I don't know how many people are using this in their house on Shabbos. I hope not, but they're very, very unhealthy. So, you know, kids like them a lot, and in camp they're very, very, very popular. So, what's the story with the using instant soups on Shabbos? So, if you go to the Starkey website, which I did, This is what they say. Powdered soup mixes are often mixtures of dehydrated, pre-cooked, and non-pre-cooked ingredients, such as vegetables, which like they have little peas and corn and carrots and things inside, and should not be used on Shabbos. Now, obviously, they're taking that opinion because they are assuming that you wouldn't want to use a kli shlishi as a means of heating something up which was not previously cooked. However, again, if one follows Rav Moshe, let's say when it comes to preparation of tea, there would be no real reason to be mechalek between instant soup and tea. You could make a case, again, going back to what we said before, in that there may be sort of like a makabe patish concern when it comes to these tradition soups. And if you have any doubt, you know, try eating one of those things raw. I've never tried, but my guess is it's pretty, it's probably pretty disgusting. What?
Salad in one of the cookbooks that uses the salad.
Really?
Yeah, it's a crouton.
Look.
They use the noodles as a crouton.
Yeah, the noodles, but...
They put the packet in the oil for dressing.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, there you go. So, but still, if you're going to eat it that way, you could make a case that there's a makom patish problem, but I mentioned already that we generally assume, I believe that there's a consensus among poskim, that there really is no problem makabatish when it comes to preparing foods on Shabbos, and so therefore instant soups, again with a klishlishi should be fine.
The assumption is you're not making it in that container, which is how it's designed.
Well, you would make it in that container. The way you would do it is.
Would that become a klishlishi?
Well, it can't become a klishlishi. There's a klishlishi. My definition is with.
Would that container be a klishlishi?
What you would have to do is you would have to take, let's say, water from the urn, put it in a cup. The cup is a klisheni, and then pour it from there into there. All right? Exactly. Okay.
So if you don't put the vegetables, which the little kids don't do, then it's a different.
There may be other things. I really don't know what they stick in those things.
So you're saying
because it's two packets, is okay.
And then there's
the... Some of them come with packets. They don't all come with packets. Some of them you just open it up and pour water in and hold your nose and hope for the best. There's a lot of stuff in there. It's a very, very long list of ingredients. And most of the stuff
are not recognized.
Right, yeah. Yes. Again, I'm not trying to be... Yeah, I'm only going to say it for the last time because I'm deliberately avoiding taking sort of a public position on the kli shlishi because, you know, there are many different opinions and whatever has been your family custom until now, you should continue to follow. If you don't have one, we could discuss it offline. But if one uses a kli shlishi, let's say, to prepare tea bags, then this would be no different. That's what I'm saying. Right, because again, the whole idea of kli shlishi, it's you can't cook anything, and anything means anything. Okay. Now let's talk a little about the ladles, and maybe this will be the last topic for tonight, even though I had a bunch of other things I wanted to get to. But we'll see how far we get with the ladle discussion. So often, hot soup is dispensed using a ladle. So, as Lisa pointed out already, if the pot is a kli rishon, and the bowl, the ladle, which is also like a little bit of a pot, a little bit, it's a vessel, so I stick it in, that's now the kli sheni, and the bowl is a kli shlishi, right? Well, so watch this. First of all, in halacha, we refer to a ladle as a kaf. And for the purpose of the discussion, a kaf is any kli which becomes immersed in a kli rishon. Typically, that would be a spoon or a ladle. I mean, you could, in theory, take another cup or even a bowl and use it as a kaf, but usually a ladle is what we mean when we speak about a kaf. And the poskim talk about a kaf as something which is actually submerged, probably a better word than immersed. It's submerged into the kli rishon. Now, there are different opinions as to whether or not this is considered to be a kli rishon or a kli sheni. Whoa, why would you call it a kli sheni? That's not nice. Why would we do that? Because since you're submerging it into the pot, so maybe now when you remove it, that's not a klisheni. Klisheni is where the contents of the pot are poured into another kli. But over here, since you're sticking it into that boiling pot of soup, so maybe we should say the ladle itself is like a kli rishon, which means that by the time you get to the bowl, you're not a kli shlishi, you're still in a klisheni. So regarding this, there again, I didn't put down my makomos here on the sheets, but I'm happy to give you them. But there seems to be, this is a very famous contradiction within the Mishnah Berurah, virtually any like Bishop of Shabbos discussion or Sefer that deals with Bishop of Shabbos will refer to this apparent contradiction of Mishnah Berurah, how we deal with this. So what do we say? So what we do is we look at other things over here, and there's more room to be lenient if one is careful not to leave the ladle in the soup, rather remove it when it is not being used. So you have to be mindful.
Where's
the pot in this case?
The pot is off the fire.
Off the fire.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could even be on the fire, but, you may ladle soup off the fire, clear soup. We're going to talk next week about Hagasa. But if it's clear chicken soup, you can ladle even while it's on the fire. But I'm assuming even if it's off the fire, as long as the soup is still Yatzel Ed Esbo, which probably will be if you're serving it, then it is still a clear Rishon. And so we would say that if you want the ladle to retain the status, to remain like a klisheni, which would mean the soup in the bowl is a klishlishi, so just be mindful not to leave the ladle in there. Why does it matter whether the soup in the bowl is a klisheni or klishlishi? Why should it make a difference? Well, the big difference, I begin because let's say you want to stick, what would you, people, some, let's say, put in challah, let's say, in a soup bowl. I don't want to confuse you too much, but I think at this point we can have a conversation like this. If we say that there is a concern of yesh bishul acharafia, that even after something has been baked, it can still be subject to cooking, and you say that a kli sheni could potentially be mevashel unless something which is not among the kali abishul. So I mean, there may be reason for concern over here. Now, the Shmir Shabbos rule is that one may be lenient regarding the question of putting bread in soup if the ladle was not left in the pot for a long time. So that's just what's best to do. That's what it says in Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchuzah. Another ladle issue, does one need to be concerned about the droplets of water that are in the ladle or soup when being re-immersed? This also comes up when it comes to, let's say, refilling a teacup or a coffee cup. Sometimes there's a little moisture left on the bottom or a few drops left. So do I have to be concerned about cooking those droplets of water on the bottom? That's an interesting question. So, when you think about it, it's a very similar type of question. Because in both cases it involves, essentially reheating some liquid, some moisture, some droplets of water, which, you weren't even thinking about. You don't even remember that they're there. So there are a number of reasons to consider leniency, and this seems to be, again, there is, I believe, a consensus among many poskim to say the following. Number one, ein bishlach habishul v'davalach. Remember last week we mentioned that according to the Rabbah we are strict and we assume that once a liquid has cooled down, it is subject to bishul again. And so therefore that's why we would not reheat water as opposed to reheating, let's say, a solid. But there was a machlokas. The Mechaber after Roll in Shulchan Aruch says, ein bishlach habishul v'davalach. So it could be that even though we don't follow that opinion normally, we could apply that over here. Additionally, this may be what we call a psikresha de lo nichle, which means I'm doing something, I'm refilling my cup or I'm sticking my ladle in the soup, not because I'm looking to cook anything. It's true that I know it's happening. It's inevitable that it's going to happen. That's what's called a psikresha. However, it's psikresha de lo nichle. I don't really care for it to happen one or the other. It really is lo nichle because there's nobody who's going to care whether those few droplets of water even stay cold. I mean, they don't, but it wouldn't bother me if it did. So, in addition, another interesting question is whether we say that there's an isser of chatzi shir when it comes to Melech HaShabbos, right? We know that when it comes to, let's say, eating non-kosher food, so even though there's a shir, let's say, kazayis, when it comes to achila, there's still an isser in the Torah to eat what's called a chatzi shir. I can't eat a portion of a kazayis, and that's also in the Torah. But there is a machlokas whether or not that concept of chatzi shir applies when it comes to Melech HaShabbos. Virtually all melechos, have a shir, which means there's a minimum amount by which it applies. So probably the little droplets of water on the bottom of the cup or in the ladle are a chatzi shir. And so therefore, if you say that there's no isur min haTorah of chatzi shir, and you combine all of these, and there are actually other considerations as well, so there is room to be lenient in this regard. What would a chumrah like this mean? Chumrah means you just wipe it clean. I don't think, even according to those machmir, you wouldn't have to, every time you stick the ladle in, wipe it clean. That wouldn't make any sense because even the Ramah says when it comes to liquids, as long as it has not cooled down entirely. So if you're ladling soup one after another, it would not make any sense whatsoever to wipe it clean in between every every, is ladle a verb? Thank you. That made it a little easier for me. There would be no need to wipe it clean, but if it sits, let's say, for 5-10 minutes, then it may have actually been at Stan and Legami really cooled down. Yeah.
Under any of those circumstances, if you had half a cup of tea and you've been sitting around talking, and now you want to cook fresh in your cup of tea, you could not add hot water to that half a cup of tea.
Well, no. So I don't know if we mentioned, if I don't remember how much I mentioned this last week, but the Rama says that when it comes to a case like that, as long as the liquid has not completely cooled, in other words, even if it's below Yad Soledes, if it's cold, if you have a half a cup or a quarter cup of cold tea, then you're right, then you have to be mindful as to how you're going to fill that cup up again. You wouldn't want to stick it right under the urn. But if it hasn't cooled...
But you could treat it, at the worst, you could treat it the way you would treat Hestes.
Correct. It's no worse than that. Yeah.
Would it apply to your clean shaving cup? Do you use it after a couple of minutes again, or do you have to wipe it clean each time, making tea for a couple of people? Can you do it one after the other?
Your decorative clean shaving cup.
Right.
Yeah, oh, so it's the same thing. It's the same question.
You can't wait more than 2 minutes or something like that.
You can for these reasons. But if one wanted to be machmir, then it would mean that after a few minutes, you would wipe it clean. But I'm not saying that that's something you need to be machmir about. Yes, Lisa.
If your urn pump isn't working so well, and you use a ladle to put the hot water in, so that would be the same philosophy that this would be the sheni into a shlishi?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Can you cover the urn again afterwards? We'll have to talk about that another time.
Oh.
Once you open it, okay. We'll have to talk about that. Maybe we'll get to that next week. Sorry.
No, that's
okay. Yes. Yeah.
Again, what you said about the pepper.
In the soup.
Can you put pepper into the soup?
So if you assume that the soup is a klish lishi, then you can, the soup bowl, excuse me, thank you. Then you can put anything in there according to Rav Moshe. I forget, I don't remember offhand if pepper is cooked, like the pepper spice, is that cooked beforehand? Anybody know? I don't think so. Probably not. Just right. So you could make a case that if it's according to Mishabura, who says that a klisheni can be mevashel, a klishlishi can be mevashel kali abishel. So I think probably you wouldn't want to put pepper in hot soup.
You just said you could.
Right? No, I'm saying there's a machlokas between Mishnah Berurah and Rav Moshe about the status of a kli shlishi. So, but the point that I want everybody to remember over here is that it does make sense to be consistent. So, if you prepare tea with a tea bag and a kli shlishi, then you can make instant soup and you could put pepper in the bowl. All right, it all goes together. This is all based on the same underlying principle. And that is that you could stick anything in a klish lishi. Okay? We're going to stop here tonight. I had a bunch more slides that I wanted to get to, but that's okay. We'll pick up here next week. We'll start talking about next week. There are several more topics we need to talk about when talking about Kalim. In addition, I'll just take it to the last slide, because I'm actually going to give out the sheets. You're welcome to look ahead. I don't mind if you do. There were a whole bunch of practical examples. But in addition, I just want you to... Before we even get to the next big topic in Bishul, some of the other topics we want to just talk about is urns with water level indicators, a very interesting halachic shaila, hot water vaporizers, which is not something typically people would use in the kitchen for food preparation, but maybe an appliance that somebody would use, which would involve Bishul, and the use of tap water on Shabbos. Hot with tap water, obviously, potential showers as well. So that was originally on line for next week, so hopefully we'll get there as well. And hopefully also maybe we'll have time to begin the next topic. Okay, so again, if you're interested in hard copies of the slides, then you're welcome to come take them here.